It is Friday, October 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the Florida Panhandle grapples with the devastation left behind by Hurricane Michael.
Homes and buildings are flattened. One person described it as the bomb went off.
A Turkish court frees an American pastor, and a new film depicts the personal sacrifice and high risk of the Apollo 11 mission. It's all ahead. Residents and rescue workers in Florida and other southeastern U.S. states are in the midst of recovering Friday from the devastation inflicted by Hurricane Michael. The huge storm's remnants have moved out into the Atlantic Ocean. Before it swept out to sea, Michael claimed at least 11 lives after making landfall Wednesday as a Category 4 hurricane in the Florida Panhandle and churned north through Georgia, the Carolinas, and Virginia as a tropical storm. The storm was the strongest on record to hit the Florida Panhandle and the third most powerful to strike the U.S. mainland. Large areas of the coast of the Panhandle, including Mexico Beach and Panama City, were left in ruins. The area is home to a number of rural communities that are among the poorest in the state. VOA's Elizabeth Lee is in the Panhandle, and she describes to me what she sees.
I'm in Marianna, Florida, which is about an hour and a half drive north of Panama City, where the hurricane made landfall.
At the moment where you are, or what you've been able to report on, what is the extent of the damage like?
There are a lot of trees in this area, the Panhandle of Florida. It's logging country, and you just see along the road trees snapped in half, trees uprooted, and as we drive closer into town, power lines are down, so it's also quite dangerous, especially if it's near standing water. A lot of homes have received damage, and much of the damage are trees kind of falling into homes or roofs being torn off when the hurricane came through. So a lot of people are in shelters or in hotels as close as about 100 miles out, and they're desperate to come home, but they're currently told not to come home just yet because there is so much debris all around the roads.
Yeah, I have heard that some roads are just impassable. People can't get through.
Correct. Even the on and off ramps of freeways are impassable, some of them. And we even saw just highway patrol out there trying to clear the debris so people can move more easily. And really, for the emergency crews and the power company trucks to be able to get to places that really need first the debris to be moved, and then they can start working on the power.
Is gas available? Because apparently some of the gas stations have been closed.
It is spotty. When you start getting close to Tallahassee, which is east, northeast of where the hurricane made landfall, it starts getting spotty, and the few places that have gas, there is no electricity or no internet connection, so it's cash only if you're lucky. And if people find a gas station, it's long lines. People are filling up their gas tanks. They have them, portable gas tanks, so they can go a little farther without a gas station. So, and as you get closer to the epicenter of where the storm hit, all the gas stations are without power, so there is no gas. And that's another reason why people who are desperate to see how their homes are doing shouldn't be driving to these areas, because you might run out of gas. But there are also people who decided to stay put, and they're trapped because rescue workers cannot get to them until the debris is cleared.
Yeah. And what about food? I mean, groceries, are people able to get, some more supplies?
That's also another problem, and that's partly the emergency crews are also trying to get that in. The hope is people at home would have, if they did not leave or evacuate, then they would have had to have stocked up with water and food. And we found one place, it's a business, a car washing business, that he had stocked up some food and some coffee. And he has running water, which is another problem. A lot of these homes don't have running water anymore. And so people are stopping by and getting a cup of coffee, and it's the best cup of coffee they've had in days because they just haven't been able to find anything. Some of the shelters have supplies, and people who are staying in their homes may be coming to these shelters just to get food or water. So it is a problem, but hopefully people have some supplies at home to get them through until stores start opening up or the emergency crews come in and start providing more supplies.
Now, I know you're near Panama City. There's another community that was very badly affected, Mexico Beach, and I might not even be able, you know, people might not even be able to get in there because the damage was just so bad.
Right. Homes and buildings are flattened. It, you know, one person described it as the bomb went off. So it just looked like that. So it's devastated. And we're told that the coastline, the shape of the coastline may even, you know, be changed. So we have not been able to make it that far south, but that is our aim today, is to try to keep driving south until the road is no longer passable. But from the pictures that I've seen, buildings are completely destroyed.
VOA's Elizabeth Lee reporting from Mariana, Florida. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. U.S. lawmakers are pushing for consumer protection on the internet. Human rights concerns persist in Eritrea months after peace deals. Pope Francis accepts Cardinal Donald Wuerl's resignation. And at least 31 people die in landslides in Uganda. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The astronomical phenomenon called the fast radio burst, or FRB, is just that, a very quick but powerful blast of radio waves from across the universe. Since FRBs are so quick and pop up randomly from sources all across the sky, astronomers were only able to detect about 25 of them between 2007 and 2016. But new technology offered by the Australia Square Kilometer Array Pathfinder has allowed astronomers to find 20 new FRBs in just 1 year. These recent fast radio burst detections are said to include the closest and brightest fast radio bursts ever detected. While scientists still don't quite know what causes them, they theorize that the amount of energy released by FRBs is quite powerful and could be equivalent to the amount of energy the sun releases over an 80-year period. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear how political fallout from the Kavanaugh hearings could impact the midterm elections. Two major stories from Turkey are dominating the news this Friday. The Washington Post reported late Thursday that U.S. officials have been informed by the Turkish government that Ankara has audio and video recordings proving that Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi was killed inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. Well, meanwhile, a Turkish court has convicted an American pastor of terror charges, but ruled that the 2 years he already spent detained means he will not serve additional time and is free to leave the country. Reporter Dorian Jones in Istanbul tells me about both developments, beginning with the Washington Post report on Jamal Khashoggi.
Well, what we understand from anonymous Turkish sources, which are believed to be high level, they say that they have obtained recordings, audio and video of Jamal Khashoggi's abduction at the Saudi consulate, his interrogation, torture, according to one Turkish official, and his ultimate murder. And there's also reports that some of this video is extremely graphic, even showing the dismembering of the body. Now, it has to be said that there hasn't been any official announcement. This is all anonymous sources, but the same sources say that they have shown this to various international intelligence agencies who have verified it, that it is a true recording. So it does appear behind the scenes that they have the smoking gun evidence to back up their claims that Jamal Khashoggi had been murdered by Saudi officials at the Saudi consulate.
Was this video, were the Turks responsible for this, or was this something seized from the Saudis?
Well, we don't know. And in fact, it has to be stressed that this is purely Turkish anonymous official sources speaking here. The Turkish government and the Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, have said nothing about this. And in fact, they are continuing to keep an open mind, although expressing deep concern for Khashoggi's situation. But ever since his disappearance, Turkish officials have been briefing international media organizations drip by drip. But this latest bombshell claim is by far the most serious claim of evidence that backs up their accusation that Riyadh is responsible for the murder of Khashoggi. Now, it has to be said, Riyadh has consistently and strongly denied any involvement in the Saudi journalist's disappearance or his death.
Is it known why the Saudis would have wanted him dead?
Well, Mr. Khashoggi is a well-known critic of the Saudi regime, in particular the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. He once was an insider very close to the ruling family and elite running Saudi Arabia, but he had become increasingly disillusioned and very worried about the direction that Saudi Arabia was heading under Crown Prince MBS. And he had to leave the country, and he was living in self-imposed exile in the United States, but was visiting Istanbul because this is where his fiancée was. He was planning to get married. That is why he went to the consulate to get some documents to allow that marriage to go ahead. But he is seen as a prime target because he was such a critic of the Saudi regime.
Well, meanwhile, in other news, a Turkish court has ruled that an American pastor, the pastor Andrew Brunson, will be released from prison. What has happened there?
Yes, Pastor Andrew Brunson had been held for more than 2 years in jail. He was standing trial on terrorism charges and espionage charges, facing up to 35 years in jail. This case, according to Washington, was purely baseless and accused Ankara of political hostage-taking and had ruptured relations between these two NATO allies. But now it does appear that now Brunson has been convicted and received a 3-year sentence, but because of these 2 years in pretrial detention, he has time served and is now allowed to leave the country and is expected to leave very shortly.
Did Turkish officials blame him for taking part in the attempted coup?
Yes, he was accused of supporting followers of the Turkish cleric Fethullah Gulen, who lives in self-imposed exile in the United States, who Ankara blames for the 2016 failed coup. He hotly denied this, and also the prosecutors also accused him of supporting the Kurdish separatist group, the PKK, which is deemed internationally as a terrorist organization. But the fact is that critics of this case said there was very little evidence there was no evidence, in fact, to support this. And in fact, in the last day of hearings, three witnesses, prosecution witnesses, recanted their earlier statements, saying one of them said they didn't even know who Brunson was, and the other two said that the court had misunderstood them. So the prosecution case all but collapsed, and this certainly fuels suspicion and criticism of the case that this was purely politically motivated. Now, Ankara denies that. They say this is purely a judicial matter, and the Turkish judiciary is strictly independent.
Dorian Jones reporting from Istanbul, Turkey. Less than 4 weeks before U.S. congressional midterm elections, the bitter confirmation battle over Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh has galvanized activists in both major political parties. Republicans say the fight over Kavanaugh has given them a boost, while Democrats counter that it has enraged women voters. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the fallout from the Kavanaugh battle from Washington.
I, Brett M. Kavanaugh, do solemnly swear.
After a bitter confirmation battle, the swearing-in of Justice Kavanaugh was a political victory for President Trump.
On behalf of our nation, I want to apologize to Brett and the entire Kavanaugh family for the terrible pain and suffering you have been forced to endure.
I'm here today to tell the truth.
Kavanaugh was confirmed despite allegations of sexual misconduct that he denied. And now the president is using Kavanaugh to mobilize Republican voters for the midterms.
On November 6th, you will have the chance to stop the radical Democrats, and that's what they've become, by electing a Republican House and a Republican Senate. We will increase our majorities.
But Democrats were also fired up by the Kavanaugh battle. Protesters took to the streets and were cheered on by Democratic senators, including Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts.
We have lifted lifted the voices of millions of survivors of sexual assault. We have refused to be the women who sit down and shut up.
The intensity of the protests will spill over into the November elections, says Democratic Senator Kamala Harris.
Let's use this week to give us all that extra energy that we know we have, to remember that the bottom line is that they may have the power right now, but we need to take it back.
The Kavanaugh battle could wind up energizing both parties before the midterms, says analyst Kyle Kondik.
Maybe some of that animus remains for Republicans, and that is a rallying cry for the midterm. But again, I think history would tell us, and polling data, I think generally tells us, that the Democrats are a little more animated over Kavanaugh and over other things.
I believe that we have power.
The Kavanaugh battle could also motivate a pivotal group of women voters, says Democratic analyst Jim Kessler.
And then there's a group of voters, older women, that have been a pretty good support group for Republicans. They're starting to turn on Republicans, and I think they may be the deciding factor in this election.
We're really looking forward to the vote.
But for Trump, a focus on Kavanaugh could excite his base, says Gallup pollster Frank Newport.
He looks at the numbers and sees he's doing poorly anywhere but his base, so he decides for his own personal sanity and his own personal kind of ego sense that he says, all right, I'll just look at how well I'm doing among my base and just talk to my base. So that's part of the reason he's doing it.
The election may turn on whether the president's loyal base can withstand a big Democratic turnout looking to send Trump a message on November 6th. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
As trade routes have crisscrossed the globe, plants and animals have hitched rides into new environments. Some immigrants have settled peacefully in their new homes. Others have become conquerors, wreaking ecological havoc and driving out native species. Many places are trying to rid themselves of invasive species, but occasionally these alien invaders carry a hidden upside. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
This reed is a bully. It's called Phragmites. This European invader has been muscling its way into wetlands across the United States. When Phragmites moves in, it drives most everything else out, says Christina Simcannon, a biologist at the Smithsonian Environmental Research Center.
It grows much larger and quicker than the native marsh grass species, and it can grow in really dense stands and basically outcompete the native marsh grass.
Some birds cannot nest in dense stands of Phragmites, and the stalks are too tough for some creatures to eat. Invasive species threaten coastal ecosystems worldwide, and the clean water, food, and other benefits they provide. But some invasives have at least one redeeming quality. They gobble up planet-warming carbon dioxide.
Some non-native species are actually increasing carbon storage, like Phragmites, in that they grow faster and they spread quicker.
When Simcannon and her colleagues added up data on coastal ecosystems worldwide, they found that overall, the ones overrun by invasive species contained about 40% more carbon than intact habitats. She says they were taken by surprise.
Yes, we were. I think because non-native species are often thought of as being negative so often, and they do have detrimental impacts. But in this case, they seem to be storing carbon quicker.
To be clear, Simcannon is not saying it's better to let the invaders take over. But dealing with them is not always straightforward.
It's complicated, which isn't a super satisfying answer if you want a direct, like, should we keep it or should we not? But it's the reality.
And the reality is not getting any less complicated. Smithsonian research shows Phragmites will have an even bigger edge over native species as temperatures and carbon dioxide levels rise. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Edgewater, Maryland.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. The world was watching on July 20th, 1969, as a grainy black and white TV image showed American astronaut Neil Armstrong step onto the moon's surface and plant an American flag in the dust. A new biopic follows his life, chronicling his courage, spirit of adventure, and razor-sharp focus under pressure that paved the way to the historic Apollo 11 space mission. The film, First Man, also shows the years of comradeship, commitment, and personal sacrifice that galvanized the American spirit and awed the world. Penelope Pulu reports.
These are extraordinary times, and we face an extraordinary challenge. I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth.
The stupendous lunar landing mission of Apollo 11 is the climactic moment of the taut, nearly 2.5-hour drama First Man by Damien Chazelle. Using sound, music, and close-up images, the filmmaker puts the audience amidst the grueling training, loss of life from technical failures, and personal sacrifices, all leading up to man's first step onto the lunar surface.
Slow your rate. Do you read?
We need to fail. We need to fail down here so we don't fail up there.
Ryan Gosling brings alive Neil Armstrong, who leads the Apollo 11 mission, while reeling from the loss of his daughter, and as a husband and father, grappling with the unspeakable risks of a lunar landing. Claire Foy plays Janet Armstrong as a tough, cool-headed, supporting wife, coming to terms with the fact that her husband may not return from the mission.
All these protocols and procedures to make it seem like you have it under control, but you're a bunch of boys making models out of balsa wood. You don't have anything under control.
During the film's premiere at the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., Ryan Gosling felt awed by the icons of aviation and space exploration surrounding him.
I was so excited when they picked here to have the premiere. It just seemed like such a perfect place to do it. It's my first time here, and I hope I get a chance to see it.
So it's kind of a first-hand experience of what these missions were like for these men and these families. It's very unique.
Damien Chazelle told VOA that he wanted to paint an intimate portrait of the astronauts, and in particular of Neil Armstrong, from 1961 to 1969, while they and their families were preparing mentally and physically for such a mission.
So for me, it was about stripping away the mythology and looking at these human beings, ordinary human beings thrust into extraordinary circumstances, sacrificing everything, putting their lives on the line, and giving up so much so that we can benefit from, you know, living in a world where we know humans have that potential.
However, there were critics. In a tweet, Senator Ted Cruz slammed the filmmaker for not showcasing the historic moment when Neil Armstrong plants the American flag on the lunar surface.
Hollywood erases American flag from moon landing. This is wrong and consistent with leftists disrespecting the flag and denying American exceptionalism.
Chazelle responded that the decision not to depict that historic scene was purely aesthetic, focusing instead on Armstrong's inner emotions in such a paramount moment, while we see the flag in the distance and the world looking on.
That's one small step for man. One giant leap for mankind.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.